You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. Our playoff coverage is brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. Mark Schlereth, the guy you are very familiar with, Dave Wyman.
Yeah, I know Mark really well. Played with him.
And, you said he's had 29 surgeries.
29?
You know, how many have you had?
I don't like to brag like him. Okay?
Is that bragging? It's just so...
No, well, it's what not you something
had,
you
You've had a dozen, haven't you?
I can't even remember.
You honestly don't know the number?
Well, if you want me to sit here and count in my head, you know, I had two in college, and then... I mean, ever since, and then since when, after I left the NFL, I had, you know, another two or three, you know, and those weren't football. Like, I had surgery on my hand.
Your shoulder.
Yeah, and my shoulder from the bike wreck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've just.
You've been put under a few
times. I'm very reckless. That's what my wife always says about you. She goes, you need to be more careful.
You're very reckless.
Just reckless. So, anyway, yeah, Mark's got, he's done a lot.
Yeah, well, he was on with John Clayton today. And they hit on a few different things concerning the Seahawks. He feels like the biggest issue for the Seahawks was health, but said a lot of it is the base defense, and it doesn't allow your defensive ends to get in great position.
You know, I think health is the big thing for them. They were really interesting to me in the way they played on the defensive side of the ball. They played base more than any team in football because of the linebackers they have. But part of the pass rushing issues is when you play base to nickel, you know, you don't get primary, like you don't get great position out of your defensive ends.
What do you think, Dave?
Well, I'm not so sure about that. I mean,
what does he mean by that?
Well, he's talked about this before, and he said, you know, when you have those guys, they call it a wide nine alignment,
right?
Where guys are way outside and sort of angled in towards the quarterback. And you know, you can line up wherever you want, whether it's base or nickel. And so I'm not entirely sure what he means there. But, you know, I think that there's been a lot of talk about this. And I'm not as big on how much of a difference that is defensively.
Well, here's one more explaining why so much base defense, in his opinion, hurts the pass rush.
If you walk a weak side linebacker up on the line of scrimmage, your defensive end, being Jadeveon Clowney, has got to play in a four technique, right?
Right.
That's where he's got to line up. That's not an advantageous place to rush the passer. And then your opposite defensive end is lined up over the tight end in a six.
Mm-hmm.
Not an advantageous place to rush the passer from, right? So because you don't play very much nickel, you don't get great pass rushing. Like, you don't get as many great pass rushing opportunities. So, you know, that's something that they'll play with, I'm sure. But those linebackers are phenomenal. I love watching. I love watching Bobby Wagner. I love watching KJ Wright.
So is he talking you can't line up in a wide nine?
I don't know why. And for listeners, two is head up on the guard, four is head up on the tackle, six is head up on the tight end. If you're inside, they call it 6-eye, and then if you're outside, they call it 7.
Yeah, it starts on the on the center, right? That's a zero?
They will call it, zero.
And then to the right.
But then there's also a shade. So you have zero would be head up on the center.
Right, and then a little in.
And then they call it, I think, a shade. No. If you shade him strong or weak on his shoulder, the center, and then the one is an inside alignment on the guard.
Okay.
And the two's head up. And so, you know, or you know, they might call that 2-eye. Some people call that 2-eye, and then they have, you know, either one, you know, on the strong side or the negative side of the center. But anyway.
So he's talking about lining up in the four.
Yeah. So that's head up on the tackle. So, you know, and if there's a tight end there, it's kind of crowded, but, you know, you can always put your defensive end out on the edge and say you're the force guy, you know, which means you got to turn all the running plays in too and rush from out there.
Well, it strikes me as something that just gets said. I like Mark Schlereth, and I'm wondering if Dave could take a break from his sack extravaganza research and maybe look into it tonight, Dave, when you get home.
Would you love homework assignments from Jim?
Well, I do. But you could find out when they're in nickel coverage, when they got the nickel guy in there, how many times they had sacks when they had a nickel guy, and how many times they had sacks when they were in the base defense.
Here's the biggest thing, and this is what Bradley McDougal himself told us, this, that they run more zone when they have their base defense in there. And the reason why is because you don't want to get a mismatch on a linebacker. Mm-hmm. And that's the only reason you take a linebacker out in the first place. You know, if they have, you know, four wide receivers, you know, sometimes you'll go dime. You'll only have one linebacker out there because it's obviously a passing situation. And then, you know, you've got matchups. You don't want KJ Wright running with, you know, some little speedy wide receiver. So that's the reason why you go from base to, you know, to nickel. So, but the one thing that McDougal said is you don't want a bad matchup. So therefore you're not running as much man to man defense when you have your base personnel in there. You're more zone because, you know, you can drop a guy into a zone and there may be receivers running in and out of there, but it's not like you have to cover them man to man.
Right.
So, and that's what you don't, and that's what it's all about on defense in the NFL is matching up. And so, you know, that's what the offensive coordinators and, you know, guys, backup quarterbacks, they're looking for some kind of a mismatch where they can get a speedy guy on a slower guy. So, you know, so yeah, they probably played less and doesn't it sort of stand to reason? You think about this year, they played kind of a soft zone defense pretty much the whole year. I mean, they did get up and run some cover one, which is man with the safety over the top. But, you know, a lot of times it was just dropping into zones, keeping everything in front of them, you know, and just kind of rope-a-dope is what Pete called it at one point.
Did they do much in the way of a single high safety?
Thank you, Bob. You know what? That makes me as queasy as when I refer to myself in the third person to you. Okay.
You get the same kind
Bob
of cringe.
He's found the defense here, Maura, that Maura was like yesterday saying, Bob, you shouldn't tell Dave the things that annoy you because he'll do them. Now Bob's with hitting me with a single high
single high safety. All right. Let's move on with Schlereth. I won't lean on that one too much. He's a big fan of KJ Wright, by the way. Here he thinks he's vastly underrated.
KJ Wright is a vastly underrated football player.
He's Thomas Davis.
Yeah, he is so good. And then Michael Kendricks, so I mean, obviously got hurt in the season, but he's a phenomenal player as well. So they're a lot of fun to watch on the defensive side of the ball.
Vastly underrated.
Yeah, I don't know about vastly. I just thought KJ played well the whole year. And about halfway through, there was some talk about, well, has KJ lost a step? I'm like, I'm not seeing it, man. KJ has done. He's a great open field tackler.
And is it because they got caught in some of the mismatches, though? It looks like he's trailing a receiver, which implies, oh, he got beat. He's behind him. You know, in some of those soft zone things, it seemed like you'd see him, and not just him. You'd see Kendricks, or you'd see Bobby trailing a guy. You know, because they would find that dead spot in the zone, and I think your eyes just tell you, oh, he's behind him. He got beat. He's running after.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the more clear situations or examples of that is, remember Tyler Higbee running away from Bobby Wagner? That was man-to-man defense, and he did get outrun. And we're hearing now that maybe Bobby was playing with a little bit of a knee injury this year, wasn't himself, so, you know, I don't know. He still made the Pro Bowl, but KJ, to me, I just didn't see where it was like, oh my gosh, this is a mismatch. It was more that they were playing in zones. Remember that play we looked at, Bob, in Cleveland? You know, sometimes when guys are running through zones, it's not your fault. But
it looks like it.
But it looks like it.
Because you're trailing.
Right. Here's one thing, and I've said this since, I think, camp. Cody Barton, the reason why I said I think he had the best camp I'd ever seen is because of his coverage. I mean, his pass coverage is really good. I mean, he knows what he's doing. And, you know, like when you drop in zone, you don't just drop back and cover a piece of dirt. You have to look at the receivers and get a feel of where to move, you know, and get in the throwing lanes. And again, in Carolina, he had two interceptions in his, I mean, if he could catch the ball. If Bobby doesn't knock one of them down, and if the quarterback throws it on target, which he didn't, he threw it way behind the receiver, I think because he saw Cody Barton there. But he's really good in pass coverage. But that's zone. I don't know about man-to-man. We'll see about that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with KJ and Bobby, and no offense to those guys, they can run like crazy. But, you know, when you start getting into your 30s, that's about when you start coming off of the nickel team. Now, Bobby, I think, is special. And he can still really run. But, yeah, I remember, I think when I turned 30, that's when I was no longer on the field. I was a two-down linebacker. And it upset me. But, look, you know, you start slowing down as the surgeries and the years start mounting up.
Are there rules to that zone in terms of, this is, you say you don't go back and just cover a patch of dirt, but are you only supposed to move X amount of yards to your left or right, forward or back?
Well, it's hard to explain on radio, but like, usually the depth is 12 to 15 yards typically, but, you know, sometimes it could be 10. And then the other thing is just where you move in the zone is based on a number, a running back or a receiver that's in front of you. And so for us, we count from outside in. The receiver out on the edge, out by the sidelines, he's number one. There's another receiver, there's number two. If there's a tight end or running back, he's number three. And if you're the inside dropper, you crowd number three. So you drop to wherever he is running his route, okay, but don't go out of your zone. So, yeah, there's these rules that you – and I don't know what their rules are, but those were ours, and I think it's pretty good sound. It's almost like a matchup zone feel, like you're dropping into a zone, but you're kind of, you know, crowding guys. Yeah. You know, you're getting close to them, and – you know, there wasn't a lot of that last year. I just saw a lot of dropping back and turning around and looking at the quarterback and not
covering dirt.
Yeah. And not getting a look to see where the receivers are. And Cody Barton seemed to have a really good understanding of that part.
Well, if that's the case, Dave, do you think with Kendricks being a free agent coming off an ACL that they're more apt to maybe just give that job to Barton depending on whatever Kendricks wants money wise?
Yeah, I don't. That's a good question. I mean, look, he also had four sacks, right? I think, or was it three?
Kendricks had three. Kendricks and Bobby had three each.
Yeah, so I don't know. If he's too much money, do you go with Barton there?
Or if they find a nickel corner they really like.
Exactly.
Does that have an impact on
Justin Coleman, if you have a guy like that. And I really believe if they decided to play, well, it's pretty obvious, but if they decided to pay Justin Coleman, they would have been in a lot more nickel. I think they just wanted to get the best players out on the field. And that's not a bad, you know, strategy. But you know, you do have to play, pretty much you have to play zone. I mean, you can take some gambles every once in a while and hope that, you know, the running back stays in and blocks, or the tight end or a receiver or whatever. But, you know, if you're able to isolate and, you know, game plan for if the Seahawks are showing, hey, well, they're going to run man-to-man with Michael Kendricks on a receiver, you know, somebody's going to find that. You know, look at that play that the first touchdown was scored on in Green Bay, where those guys started to run across and then went the other way. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was totally designed because they knew that they had a young guy out there that was, you know, going to probably have some communication problems and kind of screw it up. It'd be the same thing if you saw Michael Kendricks running with receivers or, you know, in a matchup situation where he's going to get beat. You'd be working all week to try to find a way to design plays where I can get that mismatch on Michael Kendricks. And he's a really good player. I mean, he's very fast for a linebacker. His brother, it's in the blood, man. His brother was one of the best pass against the pass as a linebacker in the NFL. Kendricks.
And he's in Minnesota.
Yeah, kid in Minnesota. And he had like 15 passes broken up. Mm. You know, so just really good, you know, sense for that. But you know, I don't know. There's limits of what you can, you know, as far as a matchup goes. And that's what matching up is all about, man, is on defense, is you don't want to get in a situation like that.
Here's a cut from Pete Carroll talking about the heavy base defense and just wanting to have Kendricks out there on the field.
It was a good learning year for us. We were we adjusted a little bit. Michael Kendricks affected us. You know, really wanted Michael to be on the field early in the year. And then we had to figure if it was going to hold up without him. And that's where Cody jumped in. And so those are some interesting things that we dealt with, and we'll figure out in the offseason.
So it makes it sound like that was the preference. It wasn't a result of, hey, our nickel corner is really problematic, so we got to keep the base defense out there. He made it sound like, no, that's kind of what we wanted because he is that good.
Right.
Still would have been nice to have a Coleman-level nickel corner just to see, all right, you know, does that help?
Yeah, how much of it was the base defense? You like your linebackers so much that you want them out there all the time. But I would think that if they still had Justin Coleman, they wouldn't have liked their three linebackers as much as they said they did.
What I tend to agree with as well.
Well, I don't remember, and I can go back through and look at the games, but do you guys remember a time where you're like, oh, my gosh, they just got smoked because they're, you know, they have their base package in there? You know,
it seemed like it was in there most of the time. So
yeah,
well, it depends on how you refer to like coverage of tight ends, because they were getting burned on tight ends, and they were Pro Football Focus had all those stats where yards after catch and all these different things with tight ends, and it seems like every team is susceptible to that, but even more so with
you got guys like
year.
Higbee having career days against them.
Yeah,
and
it's true.
And I admit that, you know, sometimes when I hear about how good these players are individually, I wonder if we're talking about the same defense. Because, I mean, you look at the stats, and they weren't good collectively.
No, they weren't. And, you know, I can say that Higbee the time when Bobby was running with him, that's the time I remember it being a man-to-man, and he got beat. But a lot of times it's zone. But, you know, going back to, like, 2012 and 13, that was the complaint then, too.
Yes. It's not a new problem with tight ends in this defense.
Right. So, I mean, look, there's only so many things you can do. If you're going to be really good at something, you're going to have to make sacrifices. You know, and everybody's like, well, why don't they, you know, fix this? Well, they're doing other things better. And, you know, there's a theory behind this defense and how it works. And a lot of it was, you know, keep everything in front of you. Don't get beat deep, because cover three is the one, you know, where you have the most guys deep, right? You got two corners and a safety covering the thirds. And, you know, or you could run cover four, which is quarters where, you know, you've got four guys deep, two guys, two safeties, two corners, you know, deep. But, you know, that's kind of a prevent more type of defense.
You're giving up a lot in front of you then.
Yeah. You're only dropping, you know, three underneath in a quarter situation like that. You got seven guys dropping, four of them are deep. So, I mean, and that's the thing with three also. I mean, cover two is really aggressive but you got five guys underneath for the underneath routes and only two deep. So it can be problematic for like seam routes and deep passes and stuff like that. But, you know, you always have to give up something. You know, if it's really good in one area, it's probably going to be a little bit weak in another.
Yeah, you're not shutting down everything.
Yeah. No,
I mean, teams are gaining yards. But they're going to get first downs.
But if the players were better, would you have a different philosophy on defense? Would you be more aggressive then? That's why I sit there and I go, well, okay, keep everything in front of you. Maybe it's because you're sometimes I sit there and I think, well, okay, why don't you be more aggressive and maybe you'll get an interception, maybe you'll get a pick six, and maybe you're going to be more vulnerable to the long pass. But let's have a wild hair and let's go, because statistically the way you're playing isn't very good anyway.
Yeah, well, I think you hit it. I mean, it's like you call the defenses that you think your defense can withstand, and maybe they didn't trust their corners enough to get them up and pressing. Because a lot of times, you know, the defensive line, and I wrote that in the article on 710sports.com.
Where?
710sports.com. Okay. And Brent Stecker put it up for me. But Brent Stecker of the Stecker Theory.
Yeah. Okay?
And
just Brandon, don't ask him about music. That's
Brandon's son of Augustus.
Wayward.
Oh, yeah. What would happen? He was on Aerosmith.
He just makes dumb Skip Bayless type comments to get reaction.
But we love Brent.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Just don't trust his musical opinion.
One of the things I said, though, is, you know, the sacks, lack of, only Miami had less sacks than them. They had 28 sacks this year. But they didn't give up a single touchdown in those. So, but, you know, a lot of times there wasn't time to get to the quarterback because they're playing a soft zone. The ball was coming out so fast that they just couldn't, you know, they couldn't get time. You want to have the quarterback pull it down and then, you know, have to, you know, regroup, and then the ball comes out and you get a little bit of time to get there. So it might have also had to do with their pass rush, that like mm-hmm. how many guys do we have that can get there? And, you know, Clowney is obviously that guy. I've mentioned Rasheem Green and how he can be just such a solid player, getting four or five sacks a year. But you don't have that guy that you know, comes off the edge like Clowney. And I know Clowney doesn't have the numbers, but that's the kind of guy that you want. And they're pretty hard to find.
You can weigh in. 710-710 is the Coors Light text line. A little more aggressive, please. Cover one.
Okay, Coach. Well, look, I mean, he's right. You know, that's aggressive defense, is that you got one safety deep and he's kind of helping out whoever, you know, and that guy's job is to find out where is the problem. Where's the mismatch? So if you have KJ on a really good tight end, you might want to help him favor that. If you see, you know, Davante Adams on Trey Flowers, maybe you want to, you know, favor that. But you're playing really aggressively, and that does lead to more sacks because you got tight coverage, and they just didn't play a lot of that. They played a lot of zone. So,
well, maybe a full season with Diggs will help too.
Yeah, that too. But, you know, let's back up and remember that they won 11 games. You know, and that the defense wasn't great by any stretch, and that's what we've gotten used to around here. But the offense was really good, and they won 11 games, and they won a playoff game.
And they did it in the toughest division in football.
Good point. Exactly. I mean, the Rams were, you know, they were right up to the end getting, they had a chance to make the wild card. And then, you know, you see a much improving Arizona team, and then, of course, the Super Bowl to be champions.
Yeah.
San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, it's weird, though, because it was a good season by all accounts, especially when they were 10-2. You're looking at it going, man, this is amazing what they're doing here, especially with the defense.
And Last month was rough.
And the injuries that they had. But
it really was.
The bar has been set so high. As long as Russell Wilson's here, anything short of the Super Bowl is going to be disappointing.
Well, I think you hit what made it so disappointing, 10-2, right? You finished with 11 wins.
Yeah.
Tells you how the last month went, and you're just like, what is going on here? I mean, the Cardinals kicked your butt.
Yet you were an inch from being the number one seed.
Yeah.
Was it
yeah.
number one or number two?
No.
You'd have been number two.
I think you were the two. Yeah, if they would have pulled that off. But, yeah, they got off to this crazy start that nobody really anticipated. So you're thinking, man, 13 wins? They went 13, maybe 14. You start daydreaming about what they could do, and they win one more game after that conversation. So it made it a little harder to swallow. Meanwhile, who are you pulling for in the Super Bowl, and can you actually root for a team in your division? We're going to give you our thoughts on that coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Can't root for somebody in your division, can you? In Super Bowl?
Yes, you should.
You should?
Yes. It makes you look good. You beat them. You almost beat them twice. You always went, this is something Husky fans could never understand. You root for the Pac-12 because you want your division to look the best.
Right, and your wins mean more.
You said it, right? Yeah. Toughest division in football.
Yes.
So, yeah, but it's also, you're going to have to, this is a young team, man, San Francisco. A lot of guys that, you know, rookie, second, third, fourth year, not a lot of old guys. Their two tackles, I think, are pretty old, but, you know, or one of them is. And they're going to be around for a long time, so it's kind of tough. But I think ultimately you want your division to look the best.
I can't do it, though. I just can't. I mean, the division looks good as it is because the season's done. You see that the team that won the division is representing the NFC in the Super Bowl, and those records are established. I don't think I need to root for them any longer.
Bob, Dave's going to talk in the third person until you start rooting for the
San
Francisco
49ers. Well, and plus they run too much single high safety in San Francisco, so I can't root for that.
All right, there we go. I just canceled it out.
Okay, and Jim's going to say, the team I bet on is the one I'm rooting for. But
well, that is correct. So you could bet if you bet.
How about
on the
if you don't bet though? Let's take your bet out of it
all
for
right.
now.
Okay. Well, here, either way, I don't think you lose with San Francisco. Like if you don't like San Francisco at all, I don't think you can lose whether they win or lose. And I'll try and explain here. This according to my research. So there might be holes in it.
Done at McDonald's.
There has not been a repeat Super. Well, no, this wasn't. Where did I can't remember.
Starbucks.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not supposed to go to Starbucks.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, if you're a Sonics fan, you're not supposed to go there. So I don't go there anymore. There has not been a repeat Super Bowl champion since the Patriots did it in the 2003-04 seasons. Okay? So then you would say to yourself, all right, well, then if San Francisco wins it this year, then that increases the likelihood that they won't return next year, which opens up the path for the Seahawks to do it.
Okay?
You like that?
Just magically opens up the path.
But it's even better if you're the Super Bowl loser. So let's say the 49ers lose. The Super Bowl loser hasn't returned to the Super Bowl the next year since 1993 when the Bills were the runner-up for four straight years.
So you want them to lose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all I did with that research, you just Google Super Bowl history Wikipedia.
Nice.
And it just pops right
nice,
up there
Jim.
For you.
Yeah. Now, so who are you rooting for then?
I don't know.
You know, because you're going to make a
sports
bet.
Sports radio, you're not supposed to say, I don't know. I've gone back and forth. I listened to this podcast called Bet the Board with Todd Furman today, and I went into it before the podcast thinking, oh, man, I'm leaning toward the 49ers. Dave, I know, really likes the 49ers, thinks they're the best team. But their defense hasn't been quite as good in the last eight games of the season as it was in the first eight games, and they were talking about how they face better quarterbacks, mobile quarterbacks. And even though they've had guys returning like Quan Alexander and D. Ford, that the 49er defense, even though you think, oh, best in the league, they really recently haven't been the best in the league. And the Chiefs defensively, I tend to think, oh, man, the Chiefs defensively last year, they weren't very good. And you always think about Mahomes. But the Chiefs defense is much better this year.
Yeah.
Especially the last five games.
Yeah, I'm kind of – I might Truly, I did this once when I was in Vegas, and I couldn't figure out which way to go on an NBA game. I flipped a coin.
But you're talking about who you think is going to win. Who would you like to see win if there's no money attached to it?
Kansas City.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to see Kansas City win if there's no money attached to it. Yeah,
is Andy Reid part of that?
Yeah, he's got to be part of it. Isn't
he? He's the winningest coach. Coach without having a Super Bowl to his credit.
And to be honest, I don't think I could handle Sherm after a Super Bowl win. I think he'd be insufferable, and he almost is now. I mean, you know, him getting up to the podium after the last game and people wanting to make excuses for my greatness. And I was like, ugh, enough.
But when you weigh it out with both teams, if you're trying to look at it objectively, which team do you think is a little bit better than the other?
San Fran.
Dave's been on the same. He's been brainwashing me all year with the San Fran propaganda. But the Chiefs might be. I think the defense is a little underrated. I think they're better offensively. They certainly have a better quarterback. They're more explosive. We've seen their ability to just dig out of a massive hole. What was it? 24-0 they were down, and they blew the doors off of them. So I don't know. I think the Chiefs might be just a smidge better overall. You could point to individual matchups where the 49ers certainly have a favorable matchup, and I would say their pass rush would be that. But overall, I might give a slight edge to the Chiefs.
Yeah, you know what? The offensive line, and we've been talking about all week, and Clayton mentioned what
Kansas City,
their tackles gave up. KC's.
One gave up two sacks.
Yeah.
One person
but
on that
17
line.
Sacks for not the whole year. It was 14 games for him. And I think he's taken a couple of sacks in the playoffs, but that – you know, maybe that's where that game is won and lost, because you look at San Francisco's D-line and how good they are. They're so good. And, you know, not just the sacks themselves, but the yardage is what they're getting out of it. And, you know, that Eric Armstead guy, kind of underrated.
Yeah,
you know?
Bosa's getting
Everybody
all the noise. He's
Bosa.
Getting all the headlines.
Yeah, so anyway, that's if they're able to, you know, keep those guys. They really have not gotten a lot of sacks. I want to say up until like week 12, I think in the last three games, I could be off by one or two, that the San Francisco defense only got like five sacks because they end up with 48, but they had 44 pretty early on, and it's kind of dried up for them a little bit. So they're going against a really good offensive line. That's where I could make the case for Kansas City winning.
Okay, well, here's a football question I've never asked you in the 9 years that we've worked together. If it's like good pitching beats good hitting in baseball, we always go by that old axiom, but If you have a good offensive line against a good defensive line, so an offensive line in Kansas City that hasn't given up many sacks, and yet you're facing a 49ers front four that has recorded a lot of sacks, who usually has the advantage there? Or is it just like a push?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always going to go with the defense, you know. I mean, you can do all kinds of stunts and things like that. You can bring pressure and, you know, but we'll see. I mean, that's probably where you're going to find the biggest, you know, matchup. If you look and at the end of the game or at the end of the half, the Niner defense has zero or one sack, that might be an indicator that Kansas City's a better team.
By the way, somebody's saying Jim Stat is wrong. Pats lost in 2017, return, and won in 18.
Yeah, I thought about bringing that up too, but I also...
It didn't make your case.
So you knew that.
I also thought, well, I saw it. I was actually getting ready to credit the 253. And yeah, there's always a chance when I do research that I might have.
I like that thought
okay,
about bringing
all right,
that up.
Hey, 253, thank you for chiming in with that and correcting me.
Oh, because they lost to Philly and then they came back and beat the Rams.
So you could just say, okay. Well, it's only happened once in the last 20 years that the Super Bowl loser has come back and appeared in the Super Bowl the next year. I'm glad you're so amused by that.
I thought about bringing that up.
I was going to.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah. Oh, you make me laugh, man. This one, Danny said it best. I love Sherm, but I don't want him to win the breakup. That's kind of where I'm at. He's a lot to take, and I can't even imagine what he'd be like after a Super Bowl win.
We have another chance, don't we? Because Fox is doing the game. Aaron Andrews could be down there.
Oh boy,
Richard Sherman. Oh. What if he?
That's what you're going to get.
What if he has another tip?
Yeah, he could easily lose his mind again.
Who are you talking about?
That was my favorite part of the whole interview, not what Sherman had to say.
She's talking about you.
She's perplexed, just going, what is your problem, man? Yeah, I can't bring myself to root for San Francisco. I just can't do it. As much as they were, that heated rivalry isn't back to where it was. It's gained a little steam. I mean, those were blood and gut battles between those two teams this year. right? Okay. And you were on the edge of beating them twice, and so it's certainly okay. Heated back up. But.
Okay, how about this, though? Maybe if I'm going to – I don't think I'm going to win and get you to root for the 49ers, but wouldn't it validate what Pete Carroll's doing, trying to run here and win a Super Bowl if the 49ers are able to do it?
By running the ball?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't care what anybody else thinks of this team's offense and their philosophy. He's had success. He's in the playoffs every year. What do I care what Joe Schmigegi on the other side of the country thinks?
What if Mahomes just goes nuts in this game and throws four touchdown passes,
awesome.
400 yards, and then everybody's going to – so next year it'll be like, man, they need to let Russell loose.
They're already saying that. They're already saying – what's the trending hashtag? Let Russell cook or something like that? Is that the latest thing?
What's that have
let
to
Wilson
do with
– cook?
He's what meaning he's going to go pick the ingredients?
I'm not really sure.
Is that what he's – remember the Holmgren thing? If I'm going to be the cook, I want to be the guy shopping for the ingredients.
Yeah, shopping for the groceries or whatever.
All I know is it has Jake Heaps fired up. He doesn't like it.
He doesn't like it either?
No.
Essentially, there's just saying unleash him, right? Just let him take over.
Do whatever he wants.
Unleash the Kraken.
Yeah, doesn't he do
there
that?
You go. Let him call the plays. They don't need an offensive coordinator. They got Russ.
There sounds like Maura's all in on the Kraken.
She's
let's
in
do it.
Release the Kraken. Do you know how corny that 1982 version is
so
of Clash of the Titans?
So cheesy.
It's awesome, though. That's
with a little
awesome.
Metal owl that flies around,
yeah.
Right?
Chirp, chirp, chirp.
That video will be on every game if they call him the Kraken.
Release the Kraken.
All right. Well, speaking of which, we'll get into that. In case you missed it, there could have been a leak as to what the Seattle NHL franchise's name will be. We'll discuss it next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It really is amazing how far we've come technologically speaking.
Well, this was when I was like 16 years old.
We're looking at clips
17.
From 1981's Clash of the Titans that had the Kraken in there. And it is so cheesy looking.
But like, it was awesome then.
Yeah, in 81, you're probably thinking, man, look at the special effects. That was so realistic. Now it looks like it's claymation. It looks like stop motion stuff.
So this is the question for the new hockey team. What is the Kraken going to look like? Because
hopefully it's better than that.
This looks like it's got like a monkey's mouth with like a beard flowing back, two sets of arms, and then was there a big tail or something?
I don't know. It was in the water, right?
Yeah.
And then ultimately it turned to stone, Dave.
So who's the dude from the ocean, the god of the oceans? Neptune?
Is that who it is?
Yeah.
I guess.
I think Neptune is the one who says, release the Kraken. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But so there's that. And then you look on like the side of there's a rum bottle, something called Kraken rum or something. And it's a huge octopus. So what's it going to be if it's the Kraken?
Well, we still don't know if it's officially the team name, right. Although there are reports out there that.
Yeah, that's what was leaked out there. Our buddy Brent Stecker has a story up on 710 Sports. And it was an interview that apparently was on SiriusXM's NHL Network Radio. It was reported that the Seattle Kraken will be the name, according to John Hoven, editor of Mayor's Manor, a website that covers the Los Angeles Kings. The Sockeyes were reportedly in the running, but a legal issue with an author who has written a series of romance novels featuring a fictional Seattle Sockeyes team is the reason why NHL Seattle is deciding to go in another direction.
Yeah, NHL Seattle saying they released a statement. I'm looking at Jeff Baker's story in the Seattle Times. No announcement is imminent, but they didn't rule out Kraken. And Maura read this earlier. While we're aware of some fishy rumors surrounding our team name, please rest assured we're doing our due diligence by scouring the depths of the ocean, the tallest mountains, and the densest parts of the forest to find the right name for our great green city.
Does that tell you it could be the Sasquatch, it could be the Sockeye.
They said fishy in there. There's all kinds of hints dropped there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the ocean, the forests. So keeping everything alive.
Yeah, and we still don't know the colors, although the same hockey blogger told SiriusXM Radio that he's led to believe it's going to be red, black, and a tealish color.
You know, it's funny. You would think this is just some silly part of it. Like, the real thing is the team. But there's a lot at stake when you're branding a team,
a lot
right?
of merchandise.
And I just think, like, the XFL Dragons, I love that logo. I like the
colors.
What
is it you love so much about it?
I don't know,
I mean,
man.
I think it's cool, but you love it.
Well, I'm not going to marry it, Bob.
Why don't you marry it? You love it so much.
I used to say that. Yeah. No, I mean, I bought some of their swag, certainly. I got three T-shirts. But
you bought some as gifts?
I think it's cool. Yeah, I gave them to my kids. We're going to be Dragons fans.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's important how you do that and how you market. I mean, the Seahawks have done a great job with that. I mean, I know when they went from the old Jim, you remember when you were covering the team, they had the gray pants with the green and blue stripe on the side, and then the, I don't know what you call that, royal blue. But then they end up going to that kind of steel blue in the Hasselbeck years and Lofotutupu. And that was designed because, you know, it's like you can wear it with dress pants. It's kind of a more of a business man's color. And then now you got this, you know, the bright green, they call it action green and everything. Yeah. I mean, that stuff's all important. You make millions of dollars off of that stuff, man.
And they'll sell whatever it is. They'll sell a bunch of it.
Yeah, well, it's in keeping with Seattle team names, isn't it? Because there's no such thing as a Kraken. There's no such thing as a Seahawk. The supersonic jet was never built here.
And then a Mariner.
Well, a Mariner. I mean, when you're out there in Puget Sound, do you consider yourself a Mariner? I suppose.
What about a Sounder?
I think you consider yourself a boater.
A Sounder.
Jim, there has to have been one plane that was built here that could go faster than the speed of sound.
Well, that was the point behind calling them the supersonics. Yeah. But yeah, as far as I know, it didn't happen.
So the report is the colors are going to be red, black, and teal.
That's what the hockey blogger said to SiriusXM Radio.
I like red and black. I'm not sure how teal would fit.
I remember Todd Lywicki telling us they wanted to stay away from anything looking Canucks-like. And
is
so,
that, oh, the Canucks are red and black?
Black and red would be, you know, going against what the Canucks are.
What's the Canucks color?
They got some green in there, I think, and some blue. Right.
Yeah, but stay away from
again,
that.
Again,
I'm looking at like a wallpaper, Bob, that's black, red, and teal. And it's not too bad.
I'd go just black and red.
Yeah.
Make it tough.
Yeah, that's a little bit tougher.
Everybody's saying Poseidon is the lord of the sea.
Oh, you are correct.
Yeah. They're getting a lot of texts on that. If it's the Kraken, okay.
There would not be another team called the Kraken. That's the thing I like the most about it, too. And I like the idea of whatever the mascot's going to look like. I like the idea of the scoreboard having released the Kraken from the movie.
Yeah. Well, everybody's saying if you're going to look for a more recent Kraken, you look to the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah. And
Was there a big octopus that ate the book or boat?
A big like octopus.
That. Yeah.
I guess it was the Kraken. Yeah.
Well, so you're saying, Jim, like not in any Division III or high school or anything. Maybe not high school, but anyway, up at
as far as I know,
next level, there's no Kraken.
There's probably a Sockeyes out there somewhere, but I don't think there's a Kraken.
Is there a totem?
Well, there used to be.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was the other one? What was the old? The
Metropolitans.
Metropolitans.
Yeah.
What about that?
You know, well, there was some talk about that.
Then you call them the Mets.
Yeah, but you already have a Mets.
Hmm. Yeah. But you got Giants and baseball and football, yeah. So not that big a deal, I guess.
I think Kraken would be off the charts with the merchandising, more so than Sockeyes.
I think the merchandising is going to go nuts no matter what it is because people are excited. People are excited for a brand new franchise. They're going to be able to say, I was there in the very beginning. I remember the first moment the puck dropped. To be there at the very beginning of something like that, I think is special to everybody. So
yeah, and what if you did Kraken and then you open it up to fans and just said, you know, what do you think a Kraken looks like? And open it up to artists and get artist renderings and then have a contest to pick which one best symbolizes Kraken to the team?
You just said, what if you did Kraken? That's all I heard.
Is that going to be their fear that the fans will be called the crackheads?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want that.
509 says, the Kraken is Norwegian and Scandinavian folklore story. We are in Seattle for crying out loud.
Yeah, he just read the same thing I did off of Wikipedia.
This is Seattle. I get his point.
Well, what was this silly rumor about that being the freeze?
Oh, the Seattle freeze? Yeah, I think that's being good.
Howdy tweeted out that it's trending on Twitter right now, but I think most people are joking that should be the name because Seattle's supposedly known for the Seattle freeze being passive aggressive.
Well, it's that part's true, but I'd prefer the freeze over the Sockeye.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, freeze sounds tougher than the Sockeyes.
Especially if it means, you know, that you're Is it passive aggressive or is it
standoffish?
Kind of, yeah, kind like of, you're not bringing.
Yeah, I think it's just like, I guess, not friendly to new people.
Yeah, you're not bringing cookies over to your new neighbor.
No,
that's what it is.
No, you're not saying hello in an elevator. Yeah. You're not talking.
Right.
That's not how they do it. All right, we're going to come back, talk some NFL. The professor is live in Miami on Radio Row. He's going to join us next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn
because knowledge is power.
That's exactly why this is such a powerful show. There's a lot of knowledge going on here. What did we learn today, Maura?
We learned that Mike Hopkins brings the juice, as the players like to say.
Coach, we really appreciate you taking a few minutes with us. Of course, we wish you nothing but the best. Hopefully, we start a streak with Arizona and we get a chance to talk to you a little bit later in the season.
Let's go, baby!
I did not expect that.
You like that, though?
I did like it.
He is just such a good dude. I'll tell you, and when Chris Peterson was there, same thing. And just,
well, how about Romar? Romar is like one of the nicest guys ever,
yes,
man.
Exactly. It's a good point. But Chris Peterson raised the 12th man flag, so I got a chance to talk to him. And I just felt like I'd known him my, you know, whole life. And some of it had to do with the commonality of, you know, being football players and talking about stuff like that. But Hopkins is just such a down-to-earth, nice guy. And remember all the stuff about Matisse Thybulle? Because Thybulle's mother had passed.
Mm-hmm.
And so
when he was in high school.
When he was in high school. And so, you know, Hop had a special relationship with him and just a great guy. Really root for him. I feel like he's good enough that he's going to end up, am I being too serious for what we learned?
No.
But I feel like he's going to eventually turn this team around because he's too good of a coach.
I feel bad for him. When I was watching the game Saturday night, I just kind of threw myself into his shoes, and it just seems so scattered and so opposite of Mike Hopkins and what he's known at Syracuse and what he's known at Washington. And I'm with you, Dave. I think he's going to get it figured out.
I hope so. They've got 10 games left in the regular season. I don't know. What do you think their record would need to be a tournament team?
Well, I don't want to say it just depends, but it just depends because the teams that they're facing the rest of the way, I mean, they need to beat some quality opponents,
right,
especially like
they
tomorrow
beat
night.
Baylor
tomorrow night against Arizona
to open the season.
But there won't be that many Pac-12 opponents that are quality teams. I don't know what the hell I'm saying.
See, some 15, 16 wins.
I really don't.
He just bailed on his answer.
I did.
Jim just tapped out on his answer right there.
I just faded like a big dog there. I had nothing left. I told you earlier I was going to run out of words at some point.
Jim just that point right is here. Mid-sentence, just, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
I know.
That actually leads really well into our next thing we learned today. Jim admits that sometimes, from time to time, his research might not always be rock solid.
By the way, somebody's saying Jim's stat is wrong. Pats lost in 2017, return, and won in 18.
Yeah, I thought about bringing that up, too, but I also...
It didn't make your case.
So you knew that.
I also thought... Well, I saw it. I was actually getting ready to credit the 253, and yeah, there's always a chance when I do research that I might have...
I like that thought,
okay,
about bringing that up.
Okay, all right, hey, 253, thank you for chiming in with that and correcting me. Well, okay, it's happened once in 20 years where the Super Bowl loser returned the next year.
Like, now, when you said I thought about bringing this up, that means that you hadn't thought of it yet. And then the guy texted in, you're like, yeah.
No, I wasn't going to act like my research was flawless. I was going to admit that there might...
It was like the beginning of the show. I didn't have a computer over here, and I'm like, yeah, he was number 3. No, he was 5. I thought that Aaron Rodgers and so-and-so were ahead. No, it was this, that, and the other. Well, I shot that down. I didn't have any of the information here.
It's because that wonderful computer sitting in front of
you.
Yeah. I just love it. Yeah, I thought about bringing that up.
I was going to.
What else did we learn?
We learned that George Karl would be open to a Sonics reunion.
Well, maybe you could come back when the Sonics come back.
Oh, I'd love that. That'd be the greatest celebration. That you couldn't give me a better Christmas present than that.
How'd you say it was, Jim?
68. Wait, he's 68. He said he had a 15-year-old daughter.
15-and-a-half-year-old daughter.
Yeah, so that means he had 53.
Well, he had two kids when he was here. And then he and his wife got divorced, so he remarried, and so he's got, yeah, a 15-year-old. And
how long do you think until the team's here, realistically? 5, 6, 7 years?
When's the NHL team starting? It's next fall.
Yeah.
So the fall of 21, I'm thinking 22 or 23, 24 maybe.
So he'll be early 70s when, if he were to be the head coach?
I'd bring back George Karl.
I loved him when he was here. I don't know where he's at in terms of what he's got left in to be able to coach at that level.
I wonder if he'd want to. I mean, yeah, like you said,
like
he's going to be.
He was talking about, hey, I'm, you know, whether there's something in Europe or something elsewhere. He sounded like he still had the desire to coach.
I'd forgotten how young he was when he was here. I was looking at it, so he's like 42, I think, when he got hired by Bob Whitsitt.
Good for him, overcoming cancer. He said he's doing a lot of speaking engagements, leadership, motivation, that kind of thing.
Yeah. What else did we learn?
We learned when we were talking about the NHL Seattle possible team name that you and Dave went way back to your childhoods for this exchange.
But there's a lot at stake when you're branding a team,
a lot,
right?
Of merchandise.
And I just think, like, the XFL Dragons, I love that logo.
What
colors.
Is it you love so much about it?
I don't know,
I think it's cool, but you love it.
Well, I'm not going to marry it, Bob.
Why don't you marry it? You love it so much.
Say that. You love it.
So dumb.
Do not.
So dumb. I remember hearing that when I was a kid. Well, if you love it so much, why don't you marry it?
Yeah.
was a classic comeback.
Yeah, like, oh, man, I love this candy bar. Oh, well, why don't you marry it then?
Was that a Pee Wee Herman thing?
I think he probably used it, but.
It might have been.
I used to watch Pee Wee's Playhouse before every game my senior year.
That guy, you fired up?
No, I just, being my roommate, that was our tradition. We watched Pee Wee.
That's weird.
Did you like his movies?
No, not really. But I thought some of the stuff, I don't know why we watched it.
At the end of the day, stupid. He was a pretty creepy dude.
I promise.
Like, most of those kid shows are when you grow up, right?
Yeah, he was caught doing things in theaters that you shouldn't be doing.
Yeah. That too, but just even the show character was kind of creepy once you grow up.
Yeah, I never really got into him.
Pee Wee?
Yeah.
I promise you we weren't stoned. Because it was before a game. But Mr. Rogers didn't turn out to be a creep.
No.
Have you seen the documentary on Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
I have not.
It's fantastic.
It's really good.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like the Tom Hanks movie, too, even though it wasn't really about Mr. Rogers.
Didn't the guy from Blue's Clues get in trouble, too?
Say that again?
I feel like there's something with him. The guy from Blue's Clues?
I don't know who that is.
That was later.
He got himself in trouble, too?
I think so.
He appealed to the children? Was he one of those actors or what?
I don't know. I just felt like I'll have to look it up. Never mind. I didn't know Blue's Clues was too late for you guys.
How about Captain Kangaroo? Mr. Green Jeans. Remember that one?
I know the name, but I don't know who they...
Yeah, I remember Captain Kangaroo.
Yeah. Wore like a red coat. And
I probably know it if I saw the picture.
Locally, we had J.P. Patches, and then Brakeman Bill was on Channel 11.
I've heard of J.P. Patches, but not Brakeman Bill.
J.P. Patches was the best. Lived at the city dump.
Is he a clown?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oscar the Grouch steal that shtick?
Yeah. Huh?
Did Oscar the Grouch steal it?
No, I don't think so.
Living at the dump?
No, JP, though. I was really bummed out one time, though. He got in a car wreck, and then you actually saw JP without his makeup and stuff on. And I was like, no, it's not. His name was like Chris Weeds or something like that. I was like, no, it's JP Patches.
Mr. Patches, sir, are you okay?
It's not Chris Weeds.
Did we learn anything else?
I think that's about all we learned today, guys. We just learned a lot about kid shows.
Yeah, that's right.
Throughout the years.
And we just learned technology back in 1981, not nearly as cool as we thought. For Clash of the Titans. All right, that does it for us. I want to thank our guests today, George Karl, John Clayton, and Coach Mike Hopkins, for joining us on the show. A lot of good stuff today. If you missed any of it, just head to the podcast page at 710sports.com. Click the podcast button and then click on our picture. It's right there waiting for you each and every day. We're back with you tomorrow right here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Let's go, baby!